We are a land of bounty, and you understand that. 229 years ago, some men put together our nation and fought for our nation, and since then we've done very well. We look around us, people have more than they need, they have abundance, they have 2-3 houses, they have everything that they could possibly imagine. We are an extremely wealthy nation, and what do you say to people like that? Well, about 3,000 years ago, there was a man by the name of Solomon who had the same problem. He was the king of a nation, and under his leadership and through God's goodness and grace, the nation had come to the point, like we talked about this morning, where the silver was so common that you were walking down the street, there was a piece of silver, you didn't even pick it up. It was as common as the stones in the street. He lived in a land where he had more than he could possibly imagine. He, as the king, was the richest man in the world at that time. He was the richest man, perhaps, who ever lived. And he was talking to a nation that was very, very wealthy. And you would expect him to have some words of wisdom for us. You would expect him to be able to say to us, but I'll tell you what that riches bought me. I mean, when I got wealthy, it was the greatest thing that ever happened. But when you read the book of Ecclesiastes, he's trying to communicate some things. And he's, in a sense, asked, who really does want to be a millionaire? As you read through these verses, he just lays it out for us. In verse 8 and 9, he says this of chapter 5. If you see the oppression of the poor, the violent perversion of justice and righteousness in the province, don't be surprised at this. High official watches over high official. Higher officials are over them all. As you walk through life, don't be surprised at bureaucracy. Don't be surprised at injustice and inequity in the government system. But then he says this in verse 9. Moreover, the profit of the land is for all. You know what's really bad about it all? You have to pay for it. And you're the one. It says in verse 9 these words, moreover, the profit of the land is for all. Even the king is served from the field. That is to say, as you look around you at the government and what's going on, you know what really breaks your heart? Every field, every enterprise, every person has to pay. Even the king is served by your field. Even the king is served by your business. Even the king is served by your income. He is saying to you and to me as he starts off this whole section on riches. And he asked the question, is something like this, will it really, really be yours? Let's say you got $1 million today. Would you get to spend all of it? Do you remember the first time you made money and then your dad told you how to pay income tax? And you and I have to understand, you won't get to keep it all anyway. Learn that. Life is like that. When you rely upon riches, remember, the king's going to take part of it, whether he's good or whether he's bad. Will it really be mine? No. Part of it will, but not all of it. Notice the next thing he says in verse 10. He who loves silver will not be satisfied with silver. He who loves abundance with increase. This also is vanity. He says, not only do you have to ask the question, will it really be mine? And the answer is no. Part of it's going to go to the government. The next question is this, will it ever really satisfy? Now, the key here is the love of money, as you know. When you become a person who loves money, loves abundance, wants more, you will never, ever be satisfied. And you have to ask this question as you're growing up, even as a young person, when you think, boy, I'm going to be a millionaire someday. Will it really be yours? Absolutely not. The government will take part of it. Will it really satisfy? No, if you love it, you always want more. You want a little bit more. There are some verses of scripture that go with that. Proverbs chapter 27 in verse 20 says this, hell and destruction are never full. So the eyes of man are never satisfied. You and I have to ask that question, will it really satisfy me when I get that $1 million, when I finally have it? And the answer is absolutely not. You and I understand that the truth of Scripture is this, it is the blessing of the Lord that makes a man rich. And no amount of sorrow can ever rob you of that. It is not materialism. It is not having more. It's not having better. It will never satisfy if you really love it. And so when you ask that question, do I really want to be a millionaire? You have to ask this question as well. Will it ever really satisfy me when I want more and more? Back to Ecclesiastes chapter 5 in verse 11. He says this, when goods increase, they increase who eat them. So what profit have the owners except to see them with their eyes? Not only do you have to ask the question, will it really be mine? And the answer is no. Will it really satisfy if I just love more and more? You will never, ever be satisfied. You always need a little bit more. You also have to ask this question. Will it ever be sufficient? Will I ever have enough? Will I ever have enough to take care of all my needs? And his answer in verse 11 is this. When goods increase, they increase who eat them. That is to say, the more you have, the more you have to take care of. And so you need more to take care of the more that you got because you had the more. And you understand that you get in the cycle and you never really have enough to take care of what you have. And most of us Well, you recognize there are some very high-paid people in our world who just keep buying more and more and more, and they have debt over their head, and they're going to go bankrupt, even though they have high income and high wages, because they don't learn this truth. He says, if you love money, it will never satisfy, and it will never be sufficient. Because as soon as you get more, you're going to buy more, you're going to have to take care of more, you're going to have to provide for more, and it just keeps going in a vicious cycle. He says, you're going to ask this question. I'm going to have $1 million. He says, but will it really be yours? No, the government's going to take part of it. Will it really satisfy? No, as soon as you get $1 million, you're going to want $1,000,010. Will it be sufficient? No, as soon as you get $1 million, you buy enough stuff that you're going to have insurance on it. You're going to have to buy gas for it. And on the list goes, you're still not going to have enough if you're not careful. Notice the next thing he says in verse 12. The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eats little or much, but the abundance of the rich will not permit him to sleep. Will this $1 million bring me sleep? Will now I be a person who can really relax? He says, be careful about this. Remember, it's not money that's wrong. It's the love of money that's wrong. He said, those who are driven for money think when I get the million, I'm going to relax. I'm going to sleep. Life's going to be great. But he says, you know, here's what is true. The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eats little or much, but the abundance of the rich does not permit him to sleep. And the truth is, a poor man who works hard, doesn't have a lot, goes to bed at night, probably sleeps really well. He worked really hard all day. He doesn't have much, but he sleeps well. But that rich man who's driven to his riches and wants more and more riches, he can't sleep at all. You and I think that it will be mine. When I get that $1 million, it's going to be mine. No, the government's going to take part of it. It's going to satisfy. No. It will not satisfy if you love it. You're driven to it. It'll be sufficient. I'll now have more than I need. No, you won't. You'll need more for what you now want. It'll bring me great sleep. No, if you're not careful, the love of money will rob you of all those things. He said, those are my words of wisdom for you when you love money. The richest man who ever lived said, those are my words of wisdom to you. The love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And those who love it will never be satisfied, will never have enough, and will never sleep well, because they'll never, ever find what God really says when he says in Proverbs chapter 10, 26, it's the blessing of the Lord that makes you rich. Well, if you ask that question, do I really want to be a millionaire? It goes on in verse 13 with these words. There is a severe evil which I have seen under the sun, riches kept for their owner to his hurt. But those riches perish through misfortune when he begets a son. There's nothing in his hand. Will it be mine? Will it satisfy? Will it be sufficient? Will it make me sleep? Here's the question. Will it be secure? Once I get that $1 million, will it now be mine and it will be secure and nothing can possibly rob me of it? He says, no. I want you to know that at any day you can lose everything that you had. If you don't believe that, go talk to a man by the name of Job. And in one quick move, God took everything from him, or allowed Satan to take everything from him, and you can lose every penny you have in one quick move. Here's what he says specifically in verse 13. It's a severe evil under the sun. Riches kept for their owner to his hurt. In other words, an owner that's hoarding them and putting them all together. And he says, you know, I'm going to have it. It's going to be secure. No one's ever going to get me. Have you met people like that? I used to work with a man like that. He just had to keep and keep and keep, and his bank accounts got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger because he was going to be protected and nothing was possibly going to destroy his life. And one quick move, God took it all. It is never secure. In fact, here's what he says in verse 14, but those riches perish through misfortune. And when he begets a son, there's nothing in his hand. His son comes along, he says, son, I have nothing for you. Do not believe that $1 million will bring you satisfaction or be enough if you love it and are driven by it. And do not think for 1 minute that you can't lose it as quickly as you got it. It's not wrong to have money, but never think it is secure. One last thing here about loving money in verse 15 and 16, where he says this, and he came as he came from his mother's womb, naked shall he return to go as he came, and he shall take nothing with from his labor, which he may carry away in his hand. And this also is a severe evil. Just exactly as he came, so shall he go. And what profit has he who has worked for the wind? All his days he also eats in darkness. He has much sorrow and sickness and anger. He says, I want you to know you can lose it, but I also want you to know you will leave it. even if you are good enough and the fortune of life is such that you don't lose your $1 million. Somehow the investments don't go south, everything goes well, and you finally end up at your deathbed. You will not take it with you. You have to understand in life you can lose it, but you will leave it. Every penny. You came in naked, you're going out the same way. And you have to live every day recognizing you can't take it with you. So who wants to be a millionaire? When you ask the question, will it really be mine? No, the government's going to take some. Will it satisfy? Not if you love it. Will it be sufficient? No, you're going to need more. You're going to ask the question, will it bring me sleep? No, if you're driven by it, you'll never sleep well. You ask the question, is it secure? Will it be secure? I can't lose it. No, no matter what your investments, no matter where it is, you can lose it all. And will it endure forever? No. You're going to have to leave it all behind. Now you understand that he's not saying it's wrong to have riches. He's just saying when you love riches, be aware. Because it's really not all that it's cracked up to be. In fact, he says, I want to teach you some true words of wisdom about riches. I want to help you to understand what you really should do in life, whether you're poor by the world's standards or rich by the world's standards. Here's what I'd like to tell you to do. Verse 18 of chapter 5. Here is what I have seen. You have him just stepping back. Remember how many times in the book of Ecclesiastes, he just steps back and looks at life. That's what wise people do. They just step back and look at life. Here's what I've seen. It is good and fitting for one to eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor in which he toils under the sun all the days of his life which God gives him. That's his gift. That's his heritage. So I want you to know, as you read verse 18 and then verse 19 and verse 20, God is the main word. Four times it appears, God. The truth about riches is this. Remember, it's God who gives it. Always remember that. You didn't earn it, in a sense you did, but God gave it to you. And whatever you eat and whatever you drink and whatever your labor, whatever your occupation, whatever it is that you have, always remember, it's God who gave it to you. And when you keep that in perspective, he said, you will become a wise, skillful person in living. It is God who gave it to you. It's his heritage to you. It's his gift to you. And we're related to God and in heritage. He hands to us what he chooses. Always remember, it's God who gives it to you. Notice it well in verse 19, as for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth and given him power to eat of it, to receive his heritage and rejoice in it, in his labor, it's the gift of God. It is not only God who gives you what you eat and drink and do, and therefore eat and drink and enjoy it. It is God who gives you the ability, God who enables you to enjoy it. You have to remember, that's one of the hardest things in life to remember. See, most of us think that if I can just get it, I will enjoy it. And the truth is, you can't enjoy it without God helping you to enjoy it. It's the gift of God. If you ever bump into a man or a woman, according to verse 19, to whom God has given riches and wealth and has given to him the power to eat of it and to receive his heritage and rejoice in his labor, if you ever meet somebody like that, that was a gift of God. It is a gift of God to wake up in the morning and be thankful for what I have and to rejoice in what he's given to me and to be thankful for what I get to do today. It is a gift of God that I can walk out into my world tomorrow morning and be happy with the life God has given to me, because you will not have that on your own. In fact, there's a translation. It goes like this. When God gives any man wealth and possessions and enables that man to enjoy them, and to accept his lot. And when God gives man the ability to be happy in his job, in his occupation, that's the gift of God. It is God who gives us what we have, and it is God who will enable us. It's the only hope we have, God to enable us to enjoy it, to enjoy the material blessings he has given to us, and to enjoy the work that he has given to us. You want to know why that's a blessing? Here's what it says in verse 20. For he will not dwell unduly on the days of his life, because God keeps him busy with the joy of his heart. It is God who gives what you have. It is God who enables you to enjoy what you have, because it is God who keeps you busy in the joy of your own heart. Only God can do that. No amount of your labor or thinking or effort can ever bring you joy, but God can. I like another translation of verse 19, to find enjoyment in his labor, that's a gift of God. To wake up tomorrow morning and to be thankful, not only for what I have, but what I get to do. There's not too many people in the world who have that. There's a lot of people in the tomorrow morning who will not have joy in their heart when they have to go off to work. But if you do, you have been given a great, great gift of God. He says, my advice to you is this. Be sure that when you think about all that money, you ask these questions. Will it really be mine? No. The king always gets a cut. Will it satisfy? Not if you love it, because you'll never have enough. Will it be sufficient? No. All of your money will bring more problems. Will it bring me sleep? Probably not. Not if you're driven for it. Will it bring me security? Nobody can take it from me. No, you can lose it in a second. Will I be able to take it with me? No. You're going to leave every penny behind. And so my advice to you is, remember, God gives you, God enables you, and God keeps for you. Keep your eyes on God and enjoy what he has. Why don't you just eat and enjoy the life that God has given to you today? He said, that's my advice to you. In fact, when I just step back and look at people, and he obviously did that, the richest man who ever lived or was alive at that time. So that's what I saw. I saw people who had found the joy of the Lord. And my advice to you is you find it. It is not dependent upon how much money you make. And it is not dependent upon what job you have. It is dependent upon you being thankful for what God has given to you. Well, when you read chapter 5, you recognize in verses 8 through verse 17, he talks about silver. He talks about wealth. Some of the things really aren't there when you think about it. And then he concludes it in verse 18, 19, and 20 with his words of wisdom, his advice. When you get to chapter 6, he jumps right on and he says, you know, we're not only talking about silver and wealth, we're going to talk about satisfaction. How then can you be this person that God enables to enjoy life and be happy with what you have and be happy with your day and to be happy with tomorrow? Well, he says, I got to give you some more advice about that. I'm going to have to pop a few more bubbles in your life. Here's what he says in chapter 6, verse 1 and 2. There is an evil which I have seen under the sun, and it is common among men. A man to whom God has given riches and wealth and honor, so that he lacks nothing for himself of all that he desires, yet God does not give him power to eat of it, but a foreigner consumes it. This is vanity, and it is an evil affliction. I want to talk to you about what really satisfies. And I just want you to know that satisfaction is not guaranteed by the riches that you have. So I saw some of those people. They had it all. They had wealth. They had power. They had honor. They had everything you could want. But God, they had stayed away from God, and therefore they did not have from God that power to enjoy, the ability to enjoy what they had. So it's empty. Satisfaction is not guaranteed to people who have riches, he says. So that's not where you're going to find it. You want to be a person who has satisfaction and joy in life? Don't go down the road of riches. That is not going to guarantee it. Let's look at the next one, verse 3 and 4. If a man begets 100 children and lives many years, so that the days of his years are many, but his soul is not satisfied with goodness, or indeed he has no burial, I say that a stillborn child is better than he. For it comes in vanity, it departs in darkness, and its name is covered with darkness. He said, I want you to know, satisfaction is not guaranteed by the amount of money that you have. But I also want you to know that satisfaction is not guaranteed by the number of children or the longevity of your life that you have. If you have a lot of children and you live many, many years, does not guarantee that you are satisfied and enjoying life. He said, I've seen many men who had lots of children, who lived a long life. And they were not satisfied with life. They were not enjoying life. Children and longevity do not guarantee it. Here's exactly what he said in verse 3. His soul is not satisfied with good. I say that a stillborn child is better than he. For it comes in vanity, it departs in darkness, and its name is covered with darkness. Though it has not seen the sun or known anything, this has more rest than that man. Even if he lives 1,000 years twice, even if that man could live 2,000 years, but has not seen goodness, has not found satisfaction in life, has not found how to enjoy life, do not all go to one place. He says, riches do not guarantee satisfaction, and longevity and children don't guarantee satisfaction, even if you could live to 2,000 years. A little illustration of a stillborn child is simply this. He's not saying that's a good thing. He's saying that if you find a man who could live 2,000 years, and every day of those 2,000 years, he did not enjoy life. Every day of those 2,000 years, he had riches and honor and possessions, but he couldn't enjoy life. He didn't have the goodness of life in him. Do you want to have 2,000 years of misery? Or do you want to just be born, stillborn? He says, my observation that if you cannot find satisfaction in life, if every day of your life you are in misery and complaining and don't see the goodness of God in your life, then you are of all people most miserable. You are of all people somebody that I don't want to be, he says. Satisfaction doesn't come by riches, but it's very important to have it. It does not come by longevity. If I live long enough, I'll be happy. It's very important to have it, though. Finally, he says in verse 7 and 8 and 9, all the labor of man is for his mouth, and yet the soul is not satisfied. You notice that little phrase, not satisfied, not seeing goodness, verse 6, not satisfied, verse 7. For what more has the wise man than the fool? What does the poor man have who knows how to walk before the living? Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of desire. This also is vanity and grasping for wind. Satisfaction is not guaranteed by your wealth, and it's not guaranteed by your longevity. And satisfaction is not guaranteed by you working and laboring real hard. If you are driven by desire and the love of money, and you work like crazy to have it, it does not mean you will be a satisfied person. In fact, the opposite is true. All the labor of man is for his mouth, if that's what you're driving for. Self, self, self. I just need more, more, more. But you do not find satisfaction in life. You are a miserable person. And all your labor is for nothing. How sad it is to bump into people who work like they're crazy and don't enjoy one day of their life. He says, you don't want to be that kind of person. The key to satisfaction is not having more riches, not having more years of life. It's not having more labor to do. That is not the key to satisfaction. If you want to be this person who can wake up in the morning and to find enjoyment in his labor, that is not how you're going to do it. In fact, he says this, I'll give you a couple words of wisdom here. As he did in chapter 5, so in chapter 6, he will close with a few words of wisdom. And he says this in verse 10. Whatever one is, he has been named already, for it is known that he is a man. And man, or he, cannot contend with him who is mightier than he. Since there are many things that increase vanity, how is man the better? See, you want to know the secret of satisfaction? It's not having more riches. It's not having more kids or more years. It's not having more opportunity to work so you can work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You won't be satisfied because of that. You want to know the secret of it? Recognizing you're just a man. And you cannot, should not, and will not contend with God. You won't take God on and make him explain to you what's going on in your life. He is saying to you and to me, you know, when you become that kind of person, life isn't fair, God isn't right, I don't like what he's doing to me. And you take God on and you contend with God. He says, who do you think you are? My advice to you is to be always mindful of this. You're just a man. You are not God. You are no match for him. And you just recognize he can do whatever he wants in your life. With Job, you remember Job is a great example of this. Job had a few bad days in his life. And then he took on God. We respect Job. I don't know if I could have ever done what he did. But he did take on God near the end. And finally God said to him, sir, I'm going to ask you a few simple questions and you're going to give me the answers. He said, Job, I want you to explain how this whole creation came into existence. Where were you when all this happened? He goes down a whole litany of questions that Job cannot answer because he is not God. And when he gets all done, he says, okay, Job, when you answer those questions, then you have the right to ask me some questions. But other than that, you just take what I give you. You accept life as I bring it to you. you become someone who doesn't take me on. And Job said, I have heard of God with a hearing of my ears, but now I've seen him with my eyes, and I abhor myself in sackcloth and ashes. And Job said, you know, I was wrong. I was challenging God for the unfairness of life. I was challenging God for what he did in my life. I was challenging God because he had took my kids. He had taken all my wealth. I was challenging God on that. And then I recognized I'm just a man. I have no right to contend with God. I only have the right to be contented with my God. You see, you and I are a people who do not have the right to contend with God. And when I understand that, life becomes pretty simple. Satisfaction is found when I finally realize I don't challenge God on what he does in my life. Besides that, he says in verse 12, for who knows what is good for man in life? How many here think you know what's good? How many here think that you could write out exactly what would be good for you tomorrow? What would God have to do in your life tomorrow that you would say, now that's good? Do you really know what's good? You're a man. You're human. You have no right to challenge God. And besides that, you don't even know what's good. Do you think Opal Arms thought it was going to be good at 2 a.m. this morning? Do you think she would have chosen that? Do you think the events of life that we would always make the right decisions on what's good and what's bad? We are not capable of doing that, he says. You're just a human. God knows what is good. And he works all things together for good to those who love him, to those who are the called according to his purpose. And every event of life is a part of his wonderful, purposeful, beautiful plan. And you don't even know what's right. And you don't even know what's good. The key to satisfaction is not more riches, more kids, more years, more work. You want to be satisfied? Wake up in the morning and say, God, I'm not going to challenge you today. Whatever you bring into my life, I will accept it as from your good hand. Because, God, I quickly recognize tomorrow I don't know what is good for me. Maybe you will bring someone in my life tomorrow I would have never chosen. But you know it's good, and you will do it for me. And the satisfied person is the person who finally trusts in God and yields to God and says, God, I'm just going to eat what you give me and enjoy the labor that you gave me. And I'm going to appreciate it as from your good hand. The wisest man who ever lived, writing under the inspiration of God, was also the richest man of his day and king of the richest nation. He said, I'd like to teach you a few things about riches that I learned. Would you like to be a millionaire? Would you like me to give you a check for $1 million? If you're driven to love money, you're going to be sadly disappointed. But when you come to be a person who accepts from God's good hand whatever it is that he brings, that's the gift of God. To find enjoyment in your labor, that's the gift of God. To wake up tomorrow morning, to walk out into your world happy and contented with whatever God has given you and whatever he's doing for you, you're the happiest man. Just remember that. And I trust that we do, and we will. Watchman Nee wrote a few words. Maybe they will help us to close this out. He said, we approach God just like little kids. We always have our hands open. We always want more. Because God is good, he almost always fills our hands. He almost always gives us the good things of life and health and friends and money and success and recognition and challenge and marriage and kids and a nice job and a good home and all the things that we count our blessings on Thanksgiving Day. And so, like little children, we run around with our hands full and we're happy. And then God says to us, son, I'd love to spend some time with you. And I'd like to take your hand and I'd like to run with you. And we say to God, but God, we can't. He says, why not? And we say, because God, my hands are full. And he says, but I'd like you to drop some of those things so you could walk with me. And we say, but God, what you're asking is too hard. please don't ask me to drop some of these good things so I could just walk with you. And God answers quietly, but son, you must. Seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. Life really isn't driven by riches, Solomon said. I had it all. Trust me, he said, I had it all. The really happy person is the one who's found the Lord and walks with the Lord and enjoys his Lord. He might be rich, he might be poor. That's not the issue. He's one who loves his Lord. You see, it is the blessing of the Lord that makes a man rich. And no amount of sorrow can ever take that from you. That's the greatest verse in the book of Proverbs, I think. I found the Lord, a rich man am I. Did you?